Very good. After a short recess, we are back in session. The fourth and final case for oral argument today is case number A21-248, Stephen Trisco and others versus Douglas County. Just as a preliminary matter, I'll make a comment that I think there was some question about the rescheduling of the argument for a later time and potential conflicts. I'll just point out that the Court of Appeals rules allow lawyers to submit notice of scheduling conflicts before a case is scheduled, and those are due to be submitted, I believe, no later than the filing of respondent's brief. And so there is an opportunity for lawyers to advise us of pre-existing conflicts, and that can always be updated if a lawyer wishes to keep us apprised of potential conflicts. As you know, each side has 30 minutes for the principal argument, and then counsel for appellant will have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal. Counsel for appellant, you may begin by identifying yourself and your client or clients and then presenting your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Chris Oyen, O-Y-E-N. I represent appellants in this appeal.
And you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. This is a case where appellants are asking for a reversal of the summary judgment grant to the respondent and the denial of the partial summary judgment to appellant. The judgment was to award summary judgment to respondent on the preliminary issue of mandamus concerning the application for the feedlot, the agricultural feedlot that my client had brought back in 2019. my client's not asking for mandamus ruling or relief. That would be something that would be left to the court if the court were to reverse the summary judgment grant against appellants. What this case is about, my client submitting a application on November 8th, 2019. My clients have a dairy farm in Osakis, Minnesota, and wish to expand that farm by building a feedlot for pigs. At first, the application included a request to build two buildings that would have pigs in it. And later, one of the buildings was taken out of the application. Ordinarily, under Minnesota statute section 15.99, the government has 60 days to approve or deny the application. A failure to deny within 60 days is approval by fiat.
So long as the application is complete, correct?
So that's correct, Your Honor. And it's my client's belief that the application was complete.
As of what date?
As of the December 3rd, 2019 communication from apparently one of the appellants, Ori Trisco. He had stated that he was going to remove one barn, which would be a reduction, not an expansion of the plan. And then he asked simply that it be tabled to the next available hearing. At the time, it was submitted for a public hearing on December 10th, and that would be December 10th, 2019. And Mr. Ori Trisco had reached out and asked for it to be retabled to a later date. And at the time that he did so, he was unaware of what the dates were that the public hearings would occur.
And then on December 11, that would be about 8 days after the proposal was reduced from two barns to one barn. On December 11, the county issued an extension of an additional 60 days. What is your position? And if that were effective, if that extension were effective, then the decision would be timely, correct?
Well, it could be. The decision was actually on, I believe, March 30th. And if in December, December 11th, it was extended by 60 days, and that again is an extension that my client didn't ask for under the statute. The applicant is the one that has to request the extension. Now, this extension apparently went out by text message, but there was no reason cited for the extension. Ordinarily, the extension would be based on an incomplete application. And it's my client's belief that the application was complete. If it hadn't been, they would have anticipated a notice that actually stated the application is incomplete.
Let me stop you, Mr. Oyen, just because a couple of things you said give rise to questions. So you're talking about a text message, but I believe that, so the extension I'm referring to is the county's exhibit number 6, which is a one-page form. And there's a paragraph about an additional 60 days, and then the check box under other and explained. Are you familiar with that document? Do you know what I'm referring to?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Okay. And that's dated December 11. So but is your position that that extension is not valid for some reason?
Oh, that's correct, Your Honor. First of all, it was undelivered, and that was admittedly undelivered. It was not sent to my client. My client actually received a text message of some sort that told him that it was going to be extended. But the reason for extension should have been incomplete application, something along those lines, or a change in the material, a material change to the application or the request. Under the law, if there's a material change to the request, then the 60 days would start over. What Mr. Ori Trisco had said was that he was taking off one of the barns that he and Mr. Stephen Trisco had intended to build. And so that, under the law, a material change would be whether or not the plan is expanded, which it was not. The actual opposite happened. He intended to reduce it. And then the other basis would be if there's a significant alteration. Under the law, and as argued in the brief, which is also argued by the attorney prior to me, was that the statute listing the significant alterations would involve changes that increase the potential adverse effect on its neighbors. Now, reducing from 2 barns with pigs to 1 barn with pig would seem not to have an adverse effect. And so that would be, that would not be a material or significant alteration to the plan.
If I can ask for a clarification on another timing matter, I think earlier in your argument, you referred to the council's decision being on March 30th. I mean, did you appeal saying it was in effect? Is that an issue before us on appeal? Because I'm looking at your brief as far as what the issues are, and you're talking about whether denial of the conditional use permit was timely denied on March 3rd. I know there was some discussion below, but is that before us, whether it was March 3rd decision was effectively made, or was it later?
No, you're correct. I believe it was March 30th. There's a lot of facts in this case that I wasn't involved in the earliest part, but those are part of the record. What our position is that the November 8th application gave rise to a 60-day deadline, which was then missed, which would have been in... But
that's why I'm trying to pin down when the decision was made, which I understand was on March 3rd, 2020, although apparently there were some findings and all that came later. So would you agree that at least that's when the decision was made, so we can figure out then when the 60 days ran, either before or after that decision?
Yes, the county's decision came in on March 3rd, 2020.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
Thank you. I did so many facts in this case that I didn't experience personally.
That's why I'm trying to get them straight.
Yes, I understand, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Oyen, it seems to me, and speaking for myself, not the panel, but your argument that the county did not make a timely decision within a 60-day window of time seems directly inconsistent with your client's position as things were happening, because in, I think, as you just pointed out, it was about December 3 when they when your clients decided to change their application to one barn, not two. But and at the December 3 meeting, your Ori Trisco orally asked that it be tabled. And then the county was prepared, I believe, to consider it at a February 11 commission meeting, but your client, Ori Trisco, asked that it be postponed until February 25, and then it was considered then. But so, I mean, along the way, your client is saying, don't decide it quickly, delay. We want more time. We want you to not decide it on these two occasions when it was scheduled or could have been scheduled to be decided. I mean, it seems to me like this is a perfect textbook example of equitable estoppel, that your client is saying one thing during the course of events and now is saying a different thing on appeal. Why is my reaction not appropriate?
Your Honor, equitable estoppel was an issue that was raised. Equitable estoppel generally requires the satisfaction of a number of elements which we briefed. We're saying that equitable estoppel, to say he waived a right, he would have to know of that right. And he has admitted, and that's part of the record, that he had no idea.
I think you're now conflating equitable estoppel with waiver, which is classically defined as the voluntary relinquishment of a known right. But with respect to equitable estoppel, I don't know if that's necessary. I mean, I think simply if your client made statements, representations to the county about what your clients wanted, that they could be stopped from later taking a contrary position. And the district court said so. And to me, it seems like that would be a sufficient basis for deciding the entire appeal. But it seems the most straightforward to me. It's common sense that your clients can't change their position in saying one thing to the county then and then saying a different thing to the court now. So I'm just wondering why that isn't a very clear basis for affirmance.
Well, Your Honor, there are five different elements to meet for equitable estoppel. We've fully briefed the issue of equitable estoppel and cited several cases about that. There's a certain burden of proof the county just could not prove.
So can you identify which of the elements is not satisfied in this case?
Well, the first element of equitable estoppel, as listed in the brief, is misrepresentation of a material fact. For equitable estoppel, and his request to table the next meeting was not a representation of a material fact. It wasn't a misrepresentation. It was merely a request or an ask. And that's why the elements, as we brief them, my client feels cannot be met for equitable estoppel. And I understand there was conduct, some back and forth between my clients and the county. But it doesn't seem that the greater misrepresentations, things like that, misrepresentation must be knowing. There must be an intention that misrepresentation be acted upon. Those things would be difficult to prove based on the record that was established. I would agree that the facts were not in dispute. It's the interpretation of those facts and how they meet the law. That was the reason for my client's appeal. But at any rate, my client is stating now that the 60 days the government had to approve, even if the December 3rd is a reset of that, that would bring it to February 3rd or February 4th, and that date wasn't that either. Even if it was December 11th, still not a decision before February 11th.
Well, the the December 11th extension, and just to be clear, I think you said something earlier that an extension can only be requested by the applicant, but there is a statutory provision, paragraph F of subdivision 3, which says the agency may extend, correct?
And I believe that's with the consent of the applicant, because the duty is on the county.
Well, the statute, I'll read it to you. An agency may extend the time limit in subdivision 2 before the end of the initial 60-day period by providing written notice of the extension to the applicant, period. The notification must state the reasons, And I don't think it requires the consent of the applicant. At least it's not in the plain language of that statute.
Okay, and my client's argument, I guess, Your Honor, is that the written notice didn't state the reasons. My client received a message that there are things that they would like to have that would benefit the county, but they didn't seem to be in that message something that stated any requirement that they be submitted.
Well, I'll read you the notice from Exhibit 6. Applicant asked for the application to be tabled until the next meeting as the applicant is proposing changes to the original application.
Correct. And that is, I think, a misstatement. That was something that was debated about the way that was written down by, I believe it was Mark Kemp that had written that.
Why is that a misstatement?
Because it was my client's intent to alter the application in a way that is a material change or a significant alteration. Again, that analysis was in the brief regarding those two elements that would require this this new application to start over the 60-day period or alter that notice period.
Regardless of what he says he wanted to do, the fact is he was proposing a substantial alteration of his application. I mean, the rules changed because of the amount of UAs that were suddenly involved. So the scrutiny would have been deeper with his first application and not so deep with the second.
And I can understand Your Honor's argument. The argument that my client brings is that the alterations were actually a reduction, so they couldn't be an expansion. And that the significant alteration clause, when you look at some of the things that are not significant alterations, it's because they're not changes that increase the potential adverse effect on the neighbors, which would be the city of Osakis and other people residing right around there. And so having less or fewer pigs, would create less odor, less ventilation, and things like that. So less of a nuisance to its neighbors, and therefore would not be significantly altered by that proposal to take out the one barn to the east.
Mr. Orion, your initial allotment of time has expired. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for respondent, please identify yourself and your client, and then you may begin your argument.
May it please the court, my name is Liz Vieira, and I represent Douglas County, the respondent in this case. This is a straightforward case about an applicant for a conditional use permit who is aggrieved that the county didn't do what they wanted. But rather than challenge the basis for that denial through a writ of cert, the appellants have sought a mandamus action to retroactively establish the dates, a violation of the 60-day rule. The standard of review is de novo, but there is also the instruction from the Hans Hagen Holmes case that statute section 15.99 should be construed narrowly against the application of the automatic approval penalty. By my count, there are at least 6 different independent avenues through which the court can affirm the district court's issuance of summary judgment. The first is, I think, the one Judge Johnson was focusing on, which is equitable estoppel. Equitable estoppel is intended to prevent a party from taking an unconscionable advantage of his own wrong by asserting strict legal rights. That is exactly what has happened here. The county, at every step of the way, did what the applicant asked, allowed them to have additional time to provide information, rescheduled their matter to be heard at different meetings based on their availability. And now the appellants come to you and ask you to assume that the 60-day rule expired before any of those events. The three elements of equitable estoppel are conduct or silence concealing material facts. Counsel argued that a request cannot be a statement, but there's no legal authority that requesting that something be tabled cannot be either a misrepresentation or, in this case, omit material facts. What appellants are essentially saying in their petition is they wanted it tabled, but only to a specific event or specific date that fell within that original 60 days. Or in one case, they say that they only wanted an extension of 2 weeks. The county's position is that you can't leave that unsaid. If the appellants wanted the meeting within a specific time period, it was their obligation to request that. That's particularly true in this case, where the future meeting had not been scheduled yet. So appellants claims that they thought the meeting would be, you know, within 2 weeks, when they had been told that there is no future meeting scheduled and that was actually on the agenda for that meeting, just isn't something that they can rely on. Certainly the county relied on their representation here. The county could have decided to hold a public hearing before the Planning Commission prior to the original expiration of the 60 days, but it didn't do so because appellants asked for it to be rescheduled for the next meeting. And obviously this would be to the county's detriment because now the appellants are asking for automatic approval of a conditional use permit without conditions. And that would go against the Board of Commissioners' wishes when they denied the application. And it doesn't factor in input from the public that is an important part of land use proceedings. So the county has established that equitable estoppel is present here. And that's one of the independent ways that the court can affirm the district court's opinion. But the second easy path for the court to affirm is the fact that the November 8th, 2019 application is not in the record. Appellants are asking you to approve automatically something that you haven't seen and that the district court hasn't seen. And appellants don't respond to this argument that the district court addressed in its opion, so they've forfeited it on this appeal. Essentially, what appellant's petition to the district court asked is that the court decide that one barn of 2,400 pigs is allowed. But that's not sufficient under either the statutes or the MPCA regulations or the county's zoning ordinance, which all have specific requirements that appellants must meet in order to have their application reviewed and approved. So because the appellants haven't even produced the application that they claim should be approved, they cannot establish that they're entitled to summary judgment. But the third way that the court can affirm summary judgment is by, even if the court considers the application to have been complete as of November 8th or December 3rd, which is the date that's been shifting throughout the litigation, the fact is that the county extended the original 60 days beginning on November 8th by another 60 days. Judge Johnson is right that Section 15.99 Subdivision 3F allows a county to extend that time limit by up to another 60 days. That written notice clearly explains the reason for that extension. And appellant's apparent disagreement with that reason does not invalidate the notice. The other issue raised with the notice is appellant's claim that they didn't receive it. But that's not the standard established in Section 15.99, which requires the authority to provide a written notice of the extension. It's provide, it's not based on their receipt. And in this case, when you look at NAFSTAD v. Merch, it's plainly established that the county did mail the notice to them, and the county is not responsible for the fact that they claim not to have received it. appellants haven't produced any evidence to respond to the county's position that the administrative assistant responsible for mailing that notice has a practice and a custom whereby she fills out those notices, she addresses the envelopes, she gets postage on them, and they're placed in the mail. Without any record evidence to contradict that, NAFSTAD v. Murch says that the county is entitled to a presumption that it was mailed. And the presumption is that mail that was sent was received.
Ms. Vieira, question about that statute, paragraph F. Is it appropriate to necessarily add 60 to 60 to get 120, or is it appropriate to count from 60 based on the date of the extension? And I guess I'm asking under the statute and also under the facts of this case.
So under the statute, the notice has to be provided before the expiration of the initial 60-day period. But in practice, zoning authorities refer to the end of the initial 60-day period and then adding 60 days on top of that. So in this case, if the original 60 days ended on January 7th, you would add an additional 60 days to get to March, I believe it's March 9th, because March 7th was a Saturday, which shows that the county clearly complied by it issuing its denial on March 3rd. And so if the court considers that November 8th application to be complete, it's clear that the county did act in a timely manner because of that extension by 60 days. But if the court wanted to consider the facts differently and accept that the application was not complete as of that date, we need to look at the date that the county actually received the information relevant to the amended application, and that amended application was submitted on January 31st. If it was submitted on January 31st, then the county's decision by March 3rd is clearly timely and within the original 60 days that would not require an extension. The fifth path that the court
has... Ms. Vieira, when you refer to January 31, is that what happened on that date, January 31?
That was the date that the appellants formally submitted the amended application, that they signed the county form for an amended application. There is some discussion in the record of potentially January 24th being the complete application, and that's because that was the date on which the county received the blueprints for the ventilation system that they had notified the applicants they needed. So considering the next round, the question is whether mandamus is even an appropriate remedy for this type of action. And the case law since Mendota Golf has been clear that the appropriate remedy to challenge land use decisions is through a writ of cert from counties. And you can see that it is a just, speedy, and adequate remedy when you look at the USS Water Solar non-precedential case that has been cited repeatedly by appellants. And that case, the party did bring a request for a writ of cert to issue a automatic approval under the 60-day rule. And that's the remedy that the court provided to them. In that case, there were some questions about notice and extensions of timelines, but they were able to achieve the remedy that appellants seek here. And appellants tell you that mandamus is not an adequate remedy because they want to seek damages. But that's not the standard for a just, speedy, and adequate remedy. That under Minnesota's land use regulations, there are no statutes that allow the award of damages as a remedy for a permit denial. The sole remedy is approval or denial or modification of that permit. So the appellants are certainly able to receive that same remedy that they seek by following the writ of cert process and accessing a decision or automatic approval that way. The final way that the court can affirm the district court is by looking at the waiver arguments. And the court concluded that the appellant's conduct essentially waived the application of the 60-day rule because the county acted in furtherance of the request that the appellants had made. So based on each of those six independent grounds, this court can clearly affirm the district court's decision issuing summary judgment to the county and the denial of the partial summary judgment motion raised by appellants. And unless the court has any other questions, I will yield my time.
It appears there are no questions, no additional questions. Thank you, Ms. Vera. Thank you for your argument. Mr. Oyen, you have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal.
And Your Honor, I guess at this point, my client would rest on the submissions and the record. In this case, I have no rebuttal statement to Ms. Vieira's argument.
Okay. Thank you to both of you for your arguments. The case is now deemed submitted. The court will issue its opinion in writing within 90 days. And because this is the final argument of the day, the court is now adjourned.
Thank you, Your Honor.